We're very fortunate to have our next guest aboard tonight. His name is Will Schwabe, and he is has been editor-in-chief at Hyperion Books. He's also written for the New York Times and Ms. Magazine and many other publications. He's co-written a book with David Shipley called Send, Why People Email So Badly and How to Do It Better. And he's currently got a best-selling novel out there. Actually, it's not a novel. It's a true story, and it's called End of Your Life Book Club, written about his experience with his mother after she was contracted pancreatic cancer. Will is currently the founder and CEO of Cook. Stir.com, and that's COOKSTR.com, which is a recipe site, recipes from many of the world's best chefs and cookbook authors. Will, we're so happy to have you on here tonight.
Thank you, Buck. I'm so delighted to be on the show. I really appreciate it.
You know, I kind of stumbled onto your book. I was looking through on Amazon some of the bestsellers list from the New York Times, and there it was. And as soon as I saw the name, it just intrigued me. End of Your Life Book Club. I have also was fortunate enough to spend a lot of time with my mother when she was going through the end of her life. How did you decide to use the vehicle, a book club, as you two got together and experienced life those last 2 years of hers?
Well, really, all our lives, Mom and I had talked about books. It was sort of standard operating procedure that whenever we talked, one of us would say to the other, what are you reading? And then we would be off to the races. After she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in October 2007, you know, of course, she had to spend a ton of time at chemo and doctors' waiting rooms, tests, et cetera. And my father, sister, brother, and I, we all took turns going with her to these appointments, but I often went with her to chemo, and we just had endless amounts of time together and started talking more and more about books. And it was almost jokingly at first that I said, you know, Mom, if we keep talking about books all the time, it's kind of like a book club. And actually, her reaction was to say that it couldn't possibly be a book club. And I said, Mom, why is that? Why couldn't it be a book club? And she said, because there's no food. But I actually convinced her it was possible to have a book club without food. And for the next 2 years, we really got a lot closer and had amazing conversations prompted by books we read together.
There's different vehicles that different people use during those periods. If you're lucky enough, you know, to have the time with the person, with your mother or father, or whoever that significant person is, and yours happened to work out as a book club. But as you mentioned, you've used that vehicle all of your lives, but between each other. When she was diagnosed, did that change the books that you talked about?
Very definitely. But in some subtle ways, or ways that it took me a long time to figure out, my mother was a very devout Christian. She was an elder of the Presbyterian Church. I'm kind of what I refer to as a lazy agnostic, which is I actually don't even give it much thought. And she started introducing books into our little book club that had to do with faith. She loved Marilynne Robinson's novel, Gilead, for example. It's a wonderful novel about a Presbyterian minister who's dying, who wants to leave a record of his life to his son. And so we started steering. We both, I think, had books we wanted each other to read. Mom definitely kept sort of throwing in books about faith, although we also read what people were reading at the time. We read The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, for example, and P.G. Woodhouse, who I've always loved. But it also increasingly became clear, especially towards the end, that the book had to have something special about it for Mom to want to read it. She, as she said to me one day, she said, I don't want to read any silly books anymore.
You know, one thing that really kept me going in that book is, as far as being intrigued, and that was how I learned so much about your mother and what an impressive woman she was and what a high achiever she was. Can you tell our listening audience just a little bit about your mother, describe her, and give us a little picture?
Sure. Well, When I was growing up, my mother was director of admissions at Harvard, which was a big job, and she was really one of the few moms I knew who was a working mother, although she always told us she hated the phrase working mother because she said no one ever talked about working fathers. And then she went on in education and was a college counselor and head of a girls' high school, and something miraculous happened when she was in her 50s. She discovered the cause of refugees. She became the founding director of the only organization in the world devoted specifically to women and children refugees, the Women's Refugee Commission. And then she traveled all over the world to Darfur, to Liberia, to Gaza, to East Timor, Bosnia during the war, working to help refugees.
One thing that it really caught me too was the description of how your mother always reads the end of the book first.
She always read the end of the book. It drove me a little crazy at first, but I then gained some understanding of it. I couldn't bear to do that. I have to start at the beginning and go to the end. But Mom just couldn't wait to find out how things would turn out. So she'd go right to the end, read it. And I really have come to believe that it increased her enjoyment of the books, that she wasn't so worried to find out how things would turn out that she couldn't stop and savor characters and prose and dialogue. And it became in my mind kind of a metaphor for our whole last 2 years, because sadly, if you have pancreatic cancer that's spread when it's diagnosed, you know how the story's going to end. It's not curable. So she knew she was going to die, and she knew she was going to die relatively soon. And so she taught me a lot in the meantime about how to live your life.
You created a blog at some point there just to keep others up to date as far as how her health is doing and how she was doing, but you didn't write it. Maybe you can tell the folks what went on there.
Well, I said to her, which wasn't the most original thing in the world, but other people had told me it's really helpful in that kind of situation to have a blog so people don't have to worry they're bugging you. And so I suggested this to Mom, and she got it, but she said, look, it would be unseemly if I wrote it about myself, and it's too navel-gay. I just don't do that. She said, you write it, Will. You write it about me. So it was called Will's Marianne Schwalbe News. And the very first time I said to her, well, what do you think we should put in the blog? And she wrote a perfect blog entry in my voice as though I had written it about her. So sort of, you know, today I visited Mom, et cetera. She wrote every word, sent it to me, and said, how about something like this? And for the next almost 2 years, really right up until when she died, she would write the blog entries as though I had written them.
That's really funny. So I think you got to write the last one, though.
I did get to write the last one. And there was something really particularly moving for me about that. But even when I was getting close to the last ones, when I was writing at one of the near to the end ones, Mom still stuck in a note. She said, make sure to put in something about healthcare reform. So she was, up until the very last one, was directing the blog posts.
You know, one thing I think about my parents and that generation, and would also cover your mother, is that they were, they seemed to be so gracious. They had these little rules that they follow for people, to interact with people that, that showed that the thought was on the other person all the time. And I got that from your mother as well, from reading your book.
She did. There's something about that generation, and it's very moving. And when I look back, I think of the little rules she had, and some of them were just little life things like make your bed every day, write thank you notes the same day if possible after receiving a gift or a kindness, unpack your suitcase after a trip, or use shelf liner. But others really just had to do with acknowledging people around you, and it was a real lesson for me the way when she was in chemo, everyone who came in got a look in the eye from Mom, a warm greeting, a question, how was your vacation, something like that. And it's so easy, I think, for me to get so caught up in life, in my own head, that I forget those things. And boy, they're really powerful.
Yeah, I think we all suffer from that. And they are good lessons to remember just how those things happen. I was especially astonished when you described how she met a woman in the drug dispensary, and ended up buying her drugs for.
Yeah, that was a very extraordinary day. We were in the pharmacy part of the outpatient clinic where Mom got her chemo, and there was a woman in front of us who was crying. And Mom had a thing where if someone was crying, she walked up to them and she asked them if they were okay, if they needed help, which I don't really do most of the time, and I should, because Mom's point was, look, if they don't want you, they'll tell you, but how can you see someone crying and not walk up? And I stepped out to make a phone call, and by the time I came back in, I found out Mom had bought the medicine for this woman that she needed for her mother. And Mom only had one thing, which was classic of her. She said, don't tell your father.
Oh. Yeah.
But she was a very big believer that you had to act locally and globally, that you needed to help the people around you who you encountered, but you also needed to work for change in society, that it wasn't enough to pay for someone's medicine. If you believed the system was unequal, you had to work for real reform.
Your mother had stage 4 pancreatic cancer when she was first diagnosed. There, who knew how much time she had, and ended up with 2 years, which was pretty extraordinary for that type of disease. When you started spending all that time with her during chemo, sitting there while it drip, drip, drips all day, talking about books, and of course it leads to other conversations, did you find that through that process she was more vulnerable, more open? Did that change the way you interacted?
It did change the way we interacted, but in unexpected ways. There was an urgency, so she was more inclined to talk about serious things. But I also got to see a lot more of her sense of humor, too, which I hadn't seen as much of, only because I was so involved in my own life and we were always conveying information. And just to sit and talk about books for a couple of hours at a time and brought out a lot. So whether we're talking about P.G. Woodhouse or various things, I got to see a lot of Mom's humor. But I also got to know a slightly different person than the person I'd grown up with, and to see Mom, which I think is part of the process of adulthood, as more of a person, my mother, and also someone who had been Marianne Twalby long before I came around. And one of the things I just most want out of this book and experience is to try to urge people not to wait until someone's sick to start these kinds of conversations. And books are such a powerful way of doing it. Whether we're talking about Jhumpa Lahiri or Elizabeth Strout's Olive Kitteridge, the books sparked great conversations, not just the urgency, but the books.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Will Schwalbe, and Will has written a best-selling book called End of Your Life Book Club about his experiences with his mother the last 2 years after she'd been diagnosed with cancer. Having these conversations with your mother, was this the first significant experience that you had with death with somebody that close to you?
Certainly with someone that close, but I'd had, sadly, significant experience with death, because I was in New York in the 80s and right in the red-hot center of the AIDS crisis, and had volunteered on hotlines and been a buddy and had several friends die. And so Mom had a refrain she kept saying, which was how lucky she was. And, you know, certainly while no one would say they're lucky to have stage 4 B pancreatic cancer, she just felt so grateful that she was in her 70s, that she had 3 healthy children, that she had 5 grandchildren, and that she'd been able to do so much. And, you know, I hated losing my mother, but I did have to agree that on the balance, we were very lucky.
Did this experience change your views about the process of dying?
Yes, most definitely. Mom died at home hospice. It was a very moving experience. For her to be able to die surrounded by the books she loved, in her own bed, and with extraordinarily caring hospice workers around, I hadn't given it that much thought, but having been able to experience this as part of the family going through it, I just thought it was a blessing and a gift, and it's made me a lot more interested in hospice and palliative care and the work that those people do.
When I spent time right at the end with my mother, I found that I had questions that I'd never really thought of or dared to ask before. Some issues, not just issues, but also some history. Did you find yourself in the same position?
That is exactly it. That really was a huge revelation I had, which is I'd always had this sort of misconception that there'd be all sorts of things that I wanted to tell Mom, and the urgency would be to tell her everything I wanted to tell her. But just as you said, Buck, what I realized was the urgency was the things I wanted to ask her. And as time was running out, it was all these questions I had. And my regrets are not things I didn't tell her. My regrets are things I didn't ask her.
Have you thought about how different it would have been if your mother had died suddenly? Would you have had the same kind of thoughts about her now or experience?
It was a real blessing for our family that she had those final 2 years. Early on in the book, I talk about my author, an author I was publishing, David Halberstam, who's a wonderful author, historian, who was killed in a car accident instantly. That was such a shocking, horrible thing. And I really do feel grateful that Mom and I had these last 2 years. And it would have been very different if she had died suddenly. We got a lot accomplished, but it does just emphasize to me yet again, with other people in my life, that it's never too early to start having meaningful conversations. Not sort of be mournful and lugubrious, but just to ask people things and engage and really try to deepen relationships.
Well, I've never written a book, and most people haven't. But after you were done with this book and you put so much effort into it and you do all these rewrites and you probably get a little tired of rewrite, so the book gets published. Now that you look back on it, would you do anything differently in the book?
There's some things I would do a little differently.
This is your first book of that type.
My first book of
right.
that type.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there was, I put in a line very early in the book that said something like, our family that week argued more than we usually did. But I didn't later refer to the sort of squabbles we had throughout the whole period. I sort of assumed that everybody knew that families have squabbles.
Sure.
But I think if I was doing it again, I might put in a few more of the squabbles just to assure people that, yes, we had a lot of wonderful, meaningful times together, but we were also a perfectly ordinary family capable of getting on each other's nerves.
I have one more thought as far as the book is concerned. That both of my parents are gone now, but you still have your father. Will this experience with your mother, have you learned something as far as the process with your father? Will it be different, and how so? Have you thought about that?
I have thought about that, and I think it will be different, but I'm not sure at all how. I do think that you can bond with people also in all sorts of different ways. Mom and I had these extraordinary conversations about books, and my father's a huge reader as well. But one of the things I've noticed with being on the road, really, all over the country with this book, is some people bond with their parents over movies, and some people at sports. And
playing cards.
It can be anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's one of those things. I think it's trying to find the areas of common interest in which you really connect with someone, and to be very purposeful about it, especially as everyone gets older.
Well, somewhere in there I read that we're all in the End of Life Book Club, so I'd just kind of like to end our thoughts right there, and if you really think about that, we all are. Every day.
We all are, indeed. That's why I called the book that. That's exactly it.
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking with Will Schwalbe, and he has written a best-selling book called End of Your Life Book Club. Will, I'm sure that people can find this anywhere that books are sold.
they can. It should be available at all different kinds of accounts, ranging from local booksellers to online.
And do you have a website concerning your book that people could look at?
I do. I have a lot of information on theendofyourlifebookclub.com.
Okay. Now, there's one other thing that we might touch on briefly, and you're working on a whole different type of website, and it's become kind of your new career. Maybe you could tell folks briefly about that, cookstr.com.
Cookstr.com, C-O-O-K-S-T-R.com, brings together recipes from hundreds of great chefs and cookbook authors, all recipes from cookbooks, and they're free and available at Cookstr.com. And we share all our revenue with the chefs and cookbook authors and their publishers, so it's kind of like a collaborative, but it's about 10,000 great, tested, trusted recipes from cookbooks.
Well, that's just great. Will Schwabe, but I have trouble with your name. I'm sorry, Will.
Everybody does.
Okay. I want to thank you so much for joining us here tonight, and best of luck with this book and any future writing that you do. And we sure appreciate you being here at WTIP, and hope you have a pleasant night.
Terrific. Thanks so much, Will. I really appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you.